Good morning, everyone, and I want to welcome you to today's meeting. But with today's meeting begins a very tragic situation that we had just recently heard. Yesterday, we celebrated the nation's 247th birthday, a nation that celebrates liberty, justice, and opportunities for all. But a nation that also must support safety for all. And this morning, Governor right now is on the phone with County Executive of Wicomico County, Julie Giordano, talking about an incident that just happened. Another mass shooting in Salisbury. A 14-year-old has died and seven others have been injured. This continues to happen throughout our nation and in our state. And I can tell you that Governor Moore, myself, our entire administration, the comptroller, the treasurer, everyone in state government, our number one priority is public safety. And especially when we see loss of innocent lives of young children, this has to stop, but we all need to work together to make it stop. We have to heal our state and our communities. We just have to work together. I know the solutions don't seem like they're out there, but they're out there. And we need to hear from every one of you on how we can keep our young people safe and to continue their full potential and their lives. And they shouldn't lose their lives so senselessly to gun violence. So right now, the governor is on the phone, so I apologize for the delay in this meeting. But I don't want to delay it any further, but let us keep our thoughts, prayers, and love for the family and the victims of another mass shooting. And I think, Comptroller, you wanted to talk a little bit about what happened to the district that you once represented as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Lieutenant Governor. And certainly I want to just all of our hearts go out to the folks in Salisbury. And you're right. We our number one priority is keeping people safe and keeping our kids safe so that they can realize their full potential. And the gun violence is sometimes it feels overwhelming, frankly, but we have to give up and we have to keep moving forward because there's no other alternative. Today, I wanted to talk a little bit about Brooklyn. So thank you for giving me a couple moments. First, I want to thank the governor for his incredible outreach support and the personal touch he brought to the residents in Brooklyn yesterday and to the First Lady. The leadership that they've shown, that you've shown over the past few days has been really remarkable. Our Senate president, the delegation, City Councilwoman Felicia Porter, our mayor and all. But I wanted to take a moment to talk about Brooklyn, which is a community that I had the honor of getting to know when I represented it for 8 years as a state delegate. I went by yesterday and it was really wonderful to see folks there who I hadn't had the opportunity to see since I don't have the chance to be there as much as I used to be. And while we're there, Mayor Scott reminded us that at the start of his administration, we on Team 46 took him on a walking tour of this very large and diverse neighborhood to show him how challenged it was. And challenged it is. This is a neighborhood that was annexed by Baltimore in the early 1900s from Anne Arundel County. It was a working class and middle class neighborhood for decades, totally connected to the port and the shipyard and the industries around it, had good wages and good jobs, family supporting jobs. The closures started the long slide of the neighborhood that used to have multiple grocery stores, hotels, the state's largest walnut tree. Most Baltimoreans now, I think we can honestly say they've never been there because they don't have a reason to go. And challenged it is, but it's also truly amazing. I fell in love with the neighborhood of Brooklyn when I first started door knocking there in 2013, and I decided to run for state delegate because I was one of those Baltimoreans who had never been there. Talking with residents there was humbling and inspiring. And some days I would get in my car and cry after door knocking for hours because I was so overwhelmed with the challenges that the neighbors faced, but how gracefully they were handling them. They deal with circumstances and situations I've never had to live with, and many of them feel failed and have been failed by economics and the government over and over, but they endure. And frankly, they do so much more than endure. They make things better for their neighbors and for their families, each in their own way. Like local mom, a local mom and leader of the PTO at the Marie Faring Elementary Middle School, a school, by the way, that's the most overcrowded school in Baltimore City, For years and years, we've been trying to get an expansion built there, and the former IAC blocked us at most turns because it was so difficult to get adequate funding to rebuild the school there. That mom reached out to us and said, well, can we at least get a new playground? And we worked with Kaboom and got it done. Or the residents of Brooklyn Homes who were frustrated because none of their streetlights worked. So we worked with HABC in the city to prioritize it and get things done. Also, the amazing Safe Street workers there. They were there the evening it happened. They'll continue to show up and be there to work with residents. And that program is funded by the state's Violence Intervention and Prevention Program. And then there are the residents who constantly amaze me. They're so amazing. And they set aside historical differences to work Saturday morning after Saturday morning with most families or taking their kids to soccer or just having lazy Saturday morning. They would get up and go to meetings Saturday after Saturday to work with their brothers and sisters in Cherry Hill, Westport, Lakeland, and more to form the SB6 and the SB7. And those who came together for night meeting after night meeting, sometimes bringing their kids, sitting for hours to talk about a vision and a plan for Brooklyn and what it should look like to create the now 5-year-old community development corporation, the Greater Baybrook Alliance. Many of you may have seen that the Bank of America made its first ever building donation in Maryland when it donated its bank to GBA earlier this year. So despite horrible housing conditions, slum landlords, failing infrastructure, food deserts, rows of empty tree pits, gun violence, and being physically cut off from the rest of the city, these families show up again and again. And honestly, they're my heroes. They inspire me every day. So my heart goes out to all the victims, their families, and the entire community. I am so, so sorry that this happened. And none of us will rest until justice is served. I hope through this incredible tragedy, some of Maryland will get to know Brooklyn beyond the tragedy, because it is more of a more than a statistic. So I hope you get to know the amazing views from Garrett Park, or the wildness of Farring Graybrook, the incredible work being done at Ben Franklin High School, the inspiring plans at City of Refuge Church, the delicious food at Sweet Home Jamaica, and more. And although I may not be the delegate for Brooklyn anymore, the community will always have a special place in my heart. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you, Comptroller Learman, for your very thoughtful remarks, and our hearts and our pain we feel for the people of Brooklyn as well. So thank you for sharing your thoughts. And ladies and gentlemen, Governor Moore now. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Please take a seat. Good morning.
Morning.
I apologize for coming on a little late, and I know we have a lot of business of the day that we're going to get to. But I just want to say thank you to the comptroller for not just the wonderful remarks, but the wonderful sentiments around it. Thank you to our partner in this work, Lieutenant Governor. Thank you for your remarks as well. Thank you for your leadership, Ms. Treasurer. It's our community is too good to continue to have to deal with this. And our children deserve so much more than this. Your remarks are absolutely right. We live in communities and we serve communities that should be known for the greatness that they're developing, for the entrepreneurs that they're fostering, for the communities that they're building, and for the futures that they're molding, and not be known and synonymous with gun violence. We spend far too much time as a state dealing with the issue of guns and violence and not making enough progress. And it's not fair, and it's not right, and it's going to stop. I know we got a lot of business to do today, so why don't we go ahead and get started with today's meeting. The first up is the Secretary's agenda. So good morning, Mr. Secretary, and thank you, and please proceed.
Good morning, Governor, and good morning, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer. There are 32 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning, and 2 reports are emergency procurements. The request of Morgan State University, I'm withdrawing item 30. leaving 31 items and the two emergency procurement reports on the. I'm happy to assist with answering any questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Secretary. Thank you. And there are actually a few items that I would like to discuss in this agenda. The first is I'd like to call up item 31, which is a request from the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services to approve a $13 million settlement that's arising from an investigation that was conducted by the Department of Labor. This investigation that we're speaking about was found between 2018 and 2021 that the department that was under the previous administration violated federal wage laws by failing to pay overtime to 3,874 current and former correctional officers. This investigation, which is a department-wide review, resulted from an initial investigation at the Jessup Correctional Institute, where the U.S. Department of Labor found that DPSDS was in violation of federal law and was required to pay $468,000 in back pay in 2021. So while the Department of Labor's investigation is still ongoing, the one thing that we know is for certain. The federal government found that thousands of dedicated and hardworking employees were underpaid for hours of work they performed at the department. And we not only owe them this long overdue back pay, frankly, we owe them an apology. An apology for having either inadequate timekeeping systems and or inappropriate places and policies in place. And an apology for the years that have gone by that the state has still not made them whole. Since day one, my administration has worked in partnership with the U.S. Department of Labor and with our friends in ASTI to identify all the impacted employees and get the money owed to them as quickly as possible. And I want to take a moment just to thank Secretary Scruggs, Secretary Grady, the Attorney General's Office, AFSCME, and so many others for their leadership and for their tireless work over these past several months in making this issue right. Today, as we vote on this settlement, my administration is committed to continuing to work closely with the Department of Labor as they ascertain whether more employees are owed back wages during this time period. So as we advance this item today and make a commitment to continue cooperation with the U.S. Department of Labor on this investigation, I also commit that we have taken and will continue to take the actions that will make sure that this ever happens again. We will work with AFSCME to make sure that these employees are made whole, as well as any others that we uncover in other departments as well. And so with that, I'd like to take a moment to recognize Mr. Patrick Moran, the president of AFSCME Council 3, who has requested time to speak on this incredibly important matter. Ms. Moran, as you come up, I just want to say thank you for your partnership with this administration, and thank you for your leadership on this critically important work.
Thank you, Governor. Thank you, Mr. Treasurer and Madam Comptroller. For the record, I'm Patrick Moran. I'm the president of AFSCME Council 3. We represent tens of thousands of public service employees across the state of Maryland, including 6,000 in the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services. I want to start by thanking you, Governor Moore, your staff, DBM Secretary Grady, Secretary of DPSCS Scruggs, and the Comptroller for working with us through this very difficult situation. We're able to get to this point because of your collaboration and understanding that we need to make those that had their wages stolen whole and leave no folks behind. Let me be clear, we do not know the depth of this theft of our members' wages. This scheme was cooked up in DPSCS and covered up by the Hogan administration, and it went on for years. Our members, dating back to at least 2017, met with leaders of the DPSCS and questioned them about how their timesheets were possibly being manipulated. This issue was raised time and time again at the departmental level, at the local level, and our members were told repeatedly that there was no problem, there was no time manipulation. Very simply, they were lied to by the department. Because individuals in management had to plan,
they had to authorize, and execute this plan.
It was not a computer glitch because it happened in every single institution across the state. We are only here because of the dogged efforts of our membership. Their efforts led to a federal DOL investigation that the governor referenced by the hour and wage and hour division. We worked with, provided evidence to, and set up interviews of dozens of our members about the DPSCS
stealing our members' wages.
Now, after 18 months, we are finally seeing a glimmer of hope. Some issues remain unresolved. Who created this scheme? Who okayed this?
Who knew and turned a blind eye?
The settlement before the BPW today would represent the second largest wage theft settlement for correctional officers in the United States history. Who's being held accountable for stealing at least $13 million from the hardworking correctional staff? If one of our members were to knowingly alter their timesheet without authorization, they would be fired, no questions, no defense. But to our knowledge, no one in management has been disciplined for this illegal wage theft. I've heard they are no longer with the department or they've moved on. Then where to? In another arm of state government? We don't know.
People need to be held accountable
because they stole employees' money. They thought that people working for free was acceptable. It is not acceptable, ever, in any situation. We will continue to work with your administration, Governor Moore, to make our members in the department whole, our staff it properly, and keep our community safe. Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your tireless advocacy.
Thank you.
Because we're just simply talking about people who are promised, and people who are doing really, really difficult work and making sure they're not shortchanged. So thank you for your advocacy. With that, any questions for my colleagues?
No, just a quick comment.
Please.
Thank you, Governor. I want to start by thanking you and Secretary Grady and Secretary Scruggs and your administration for the thorough work that you've undertaken from the earliest days, frankly, of your administration to work with us. And thank Secretary Scruggs for her letter to the Board of Public Works regarding this matter. Being transparent about what happened with all state workers and with the public is essential. And as the secretary wrote in her letter and the governor referenced, this matter isn't over. It's not finished as the department and AFSCME and the U.S. Department of Labor work together to review what other classes of employees are still owed money. Now, in another item, we're going to be reviewing remuneration for stealing years of a life. And in this item, we're approving remuneration for stealing years of thousands of people's livelihoods. So I also want to apologize on behalf of the state that this happened and let our workers know how unacceptable this practice was. It was a blatant violation of the long-established Fair Labor Standards Act, and trained professionals should have and did know better. As an attorney, I had the honor of representing many workers doing Fair Labor Standards Act cases where employers were stealing their hard-earned wages, and it's shocking to me to see it, that a state agency engaged in this type of behavior. Because it's called wage theft for a reason. Patrick, you said, you know, if your employees had manipulated the time clock to show they would have been fired, I would say they probably would have been prosecuted for fraud or theft and had to pay it all back as well. So I'm glad that because of the work of AFSCME and the investigation by USDOL, thousands of dedicated public servants will finally receive compensation for their work, which was rightly owed to them in the first place. And I think this is a lesson to all of us and all of our agencies. And I say this as, you know, we have the Central Payroll Bureau in our department to be mindful of all of our wage and hour laws because the state must be a model employer for all to make sure that we're showing everybody what we should be doing. So I'm glad that DPSCS has changed operations, and I believe it's imperative and know that the governor is making sure that all of our systems and processes, which allowed this stuff to happen in the first place, would be giving a second look statewide to ensure that something like this can never happen again in any agency. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you so much, Madam Comptroller.
Thank you. Thank you.
Please.
Is there someone from the agency that I can ask a question of?
For yes, yes,
yes.
Thank you, Patrick.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is notwithstanding the questions, the comments of the governor and the comptroller. This is a little bit different. I'm just curious. It said that the settlement, if approved in the amount of $13 million, 20 $3,474.09. It's coming out of the department's budget. The agency has that kind of money laying around. How do you just come up? I mean, and it's not you, but I'm just saying, how do you just have $13 million in a budget to write a check for? Not that it shouldn't be written. It absolutely should be. But I guess I'm wondering who has that kind of money laying around.
Thank you. I'm going to defer to Secretary
Davis. Treasurer Davis, I'm happy to answer that question on behalf of Secretary Scruggs. Helene Grady, Secretary of Budget and Management. I think Mr. Moran raised the fact that this was brought to the administration's attention, this issue, in the very early days of the administration in January. From that point, the governor took control to prioritize the addition of $15 million in his supplemental budget for the fiscal 23 budget for Department of Public Safety in order to ensure we had the funding available in the public safety budget to make these employees whole. You might remember that was at the same time as significant revenue write-down, and so made it all that more challenging to do. But I give the governor significant credit for prioritizing this among all the other requests and needs of various agencies.
And don't get me wrong, I don't want anybody to misunderstand. I'm not saying that it shouldn't have been done. I was just wondering, like, how does an agency have the resources? But it looks like it was anticipated, so we were able to properly plan for this. That was it.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, thank you. Transition, another item that I'd like to call up is item 21. And this actually continues on the theme of truth and reconciliation, about for us to be able to move forward as a society, we really need to be able to have both. And for item 21, it directs $2.9 million in compensation through the Walter Lomax Act to Mr. John Huffington for being wrongfully convicted and incarcerated more than 3 decades. Erroneously convicted in 1981 for 2 counts of first-degree felony murder, Mr. Huffington spent 32 years behind bars. 10 of those years were on death row. In May 2013, the Frederick County Circuit Court vacated his erroneous convictions and ordered a new trial. And on July 22nd, 2013, almost a decade ago, he was released from incarceration, becoming the 191st person, death row prisoner, to be exonerated since 1973. In 2021, the Maryland Supreme Court took the rare but necessary action to disbar the Harford County State's attorney at the time, who represented the state in the case, for prosecutorial misconduct in withholding exculpatory evidence that would have proven Mr. Huffington's innocence. Mr. Huffington, John, was wrongfully incarcerated for 11,575 days. 11,575 days. He was robbed of time being spent away from family and loved ones, holidays, birthdays, missed milestones, opportunities denied, injustice, time and time again. And it'd be understandable to grow angry at the criminal justice system or just society as a whole, who frankly failed him. He was literally sentenced to death for crimes that he never committed. But when he was released in 2013, that wasn't the route that Mr. Huffington took. Instead, he chose to give back to his community generously and selflessly. He worked as a logistics manager for Second Chance, which provides job training programs for those experiencing unemployment challenges in Baltimore, including ex-offenders. He then worked at the Living Classrooms Foundation as Director of Workforce Development, responsible for developing job training efforts for its reentry program. And now he's a Corporate Social Responsibility Director for a holdings management company and as the Vice President and COO of Kinetic Capital Community Foundation. He's been involved in Project Serve. He sat on numerous nonprofit and governmental boards. He authored a book, which I'm proud to say I have its signature inside of my office, and it's a very good book. He has given numerous speeches, presentations, interviews to raise awareness about his experiences and the flaws within our criminal justice system. John's become a friend. I'm thankful not just because he is willing to share his story, but he's been willing to take his pain and turn it into purpose. He's joined here today along with his girlfriend, Chrissy, his legal team, his tribe, his friends. Good to see you, Squeak. Mr. Huffington, John, I cannot say enough how inspired I am by you, how grateful I am for you, how sorry I am for what you had to go through, but how amazed by the power that you have to turn this experience into something that we as a state should and will learn from. And as a state chief executive, and as a very proud Marylander, that you have chosen to share your talents and passion with your community is nothing short of remarkable. John, would you please stand up so we all can recognize you? We're honored by your presence here today, and your presence here today, frankly, serves as a reminder that our state hasn't always gotten it right, but we are always going to keep searching to make sure that we do. Your presence here today reminds us not just of an injustice that happened, but the fact that progress is possible as long as we stay committed and determined, and the fact that you're such an important part of that progress now and the work that you're doing says everything to everybody about who you are. So bless you, man, and thank you so much. And on behalf of the entire state of Maryland, we are deeply, deeply sorry, and we're deeply, deeply inspired by the work that you're doing now. So bless you, and thank you so much. With that, I'd like to throw it to our comptroller as well.
I just like to associate myself with that now. John, you're an inspiration to all of us. I brought my son today because I wanted him to be able to witness and understand that failure, that government makes massive failures sometimes, but we have to put people in place to try to correct those. And I'm just so inspired by you and the work that you do. You know, I recognize that no dollar amount can ever make up for what was stolen from you, but I hope that today's action brings some solace, some vindication. It's wonderful to see you living life to its full potential. I'm so inspired by everything you do. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Comptroller. Thank you. And lastly, we have a number of operating grants, items 4 through 20, which we are approving today. And with these state investments, it's underscoring a strong commitment that the partnership that the administration, the General Assembly, and the Board of Public Works has with our local jurisdictions and our nonprofit organizations. And so I'm proud of the incredible investments that we are advancing today, funding the Western Maryland Scenic Railroad, the Maryland Zoo, the Historic Annapolis Foundation, the Chesapeake Conservation Corps, just to name a few. And we're so proud that these investments really are making not just a meaningful impact on our communities, but also making a meaningful impact on the direction of our state as a whole. And so Mr. Greg Burks, of the Urban Trees, who's the Urban Trees Program Manager of the Chesapeake Bay Trust, has requested to speak in support of item 7. Mr. Burks, please come up to the hot seat. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks so much for being here. Thank you for the incredible work that you and your colleagues are doing. And we're thankful for to have on behalf of item 7. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. So thank you, Comptroller Lehman, Treasurer Davis, and of course, Governor Moore. It is an honor to be here. For the record, my name is Greg Burks, and I manage the Urban Trees Grant Program at the Chesapeake Bay Trust. And again, I'm here to talk about being considered today to manage two programs totaling $11.5 million. that will make significant impacts on many lives here in our state of Maryland. For the first $1.5 million of the $11.5 million is to be applied in statute to the Chesapeake Conservation and Climate Corps. To give a little bit of history, that program was established in 2010 by the Maryland General Assembly to provide one-time stipends, supported by terms of service to youth 18 to 25 to experience opportunities in natural resources fields. And, you know, it's a great opportunity. Fast forward to 2022, the Climate Solutions Now Act actually expanded the program to include that $1.5 million per year to include climate justice themes, and increase the stipends for those core members, which is really exciting. So today I'm happy to announce we have identified over 50 core members who are really excited to start their terms this August. These young, youthful, energetic youth are really going to make some significant strides and really make a significant impact in environmental restoration, community engagement, sustainable agriculture, energy conservation, and even forestry. We are so proud of these youth. These youth are really our future. They're the next stewards of restoration and improving the health and well-being for everyone in our state. But really, it's about the impact on them and their lives. We're so proud of them and the opportunity they're about to experience. What a wonderful way to build opportunities in these young youth. So honestly, thank you. So we're really excited. Next program I'd like, so before I go ahead, money out of that $1.5 million is also joined by DNR, BG&E, the Trust, and the National Park Service. So it's a collaborative effort there as well. Now talking about the next part of the funding, the $10 million out of the $11.5 million is the Urban Trees Grant Program, which came out of the Tree Solutions Now Act of 2021, which stated in statute that trees are replanted in urban underserved communities that have high employment, low income, any neighborhood that has been redlined in its history, or communities, or there's any public housing. The statute and the Urban Trees Program is to bring communities together to plant trees in neighborhoods, really to focus on urban heat island effect, air quality, shade, all the things that improve the lives and well-being for individuals across the state of Maryland. We had the opportunity last year to present to the Board of Public Works to kick off the program. At the time, we identified 36 individuals for tree planting projects across the state, and those individuals have all hit the ground running. They are already approaching their second planting season. They have mobilized. They are ordering native tree species. They are doing so much work in communities to really have conversations about why trees are important. What are the needs? What are the benefits? And it's really talking about the lasting impact of trees in the neighborhood. And it's just been so phenomenal to see these groups come together. I've had the opportunity to walk in many neighborhoods across our state and hear communities so excited about this initiative. And I'm only one person reporting, but the weight and impact of these groups, having discussion, seeing trees in ground. Every time I drive in the city, I see a white tag from a tree. I'm like, those are our trees. They're popping up. And it's just so amazing to see the impact that they're going to have on these communities. So just so phenomenal. Right now, the funding we're going to discuss today is that additional $10 million. We identify another 28 groups who are ready to get started in the fall. They're also excited. They're ready to mobilize their groups. And we're just so appreciative of the funding to help get them going. The Urban Tree Program has just been, like I said, I am one person. But what I can tell you is the impact and hearing stories from residents about air quality and shaded playgrounds for youth and bus stops and how important that is really makes this, it brings this program to life and why the impact on human health and the connection to trees is so important. So again, the Urban Tree Program, it focuses on tree planting. It covers everything from staff time, maintenance, tools, supplies, many elements to make sure that communities applying to this program get what they need to hit the ground running, get those trees in ground, and make sure that they get what they need to survive and thrive for many years to come.
Your energy is contagious.
I'm ready to go like go plant some trees right now.
Yeah, it really is important. I mean, I put some trees in the ground myself. I just feel so inspired. So I don't have any room, but we want to get the tree in ground because it really does make an impact. So
yes, we do.
Thank you for that feedback. I appreciate it. And we're just honored to be here because it's about the impact. It's about our youth, our state, the folks involved, and air quality and shade. It's about all those elements. It's so important. So we thank you.
Amen.
We appreciate it.
Amen. Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your remarks. But importantly, thank you and thank the Chesapeake Bay Trust for your leadership. This is the kind of stuff that makes our state better, not just because of its long-term impact, but because it's bringing everyone else along with it. So thank you for your time and thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Governor. Appreciate it.
Keep driving. Any further discussion on the remainder of the Secretary's agenda?
No.
Okay. May I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Motion to approve the Secretary's agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
Outstanding. Thank you so much. The next up is the Department of Natural Resources. Secretary Kurtz, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Governor, Mr. Treasurer, Madam Comptroller. For the record, my name is Josh Kurtz. I'm the Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources. I'm thrilled to be here today. Tough to follow Mr. Burks there. Love the enthusiasm. Really big fans of the program here at DNR as well. Today, the department has 7 items for your consideration. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. I have staff on hand as well. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Secretary. By your enthusiasm too, Mr. Secretary. Is there any discussion on the DNR agenda?
No discussion.
Okay, great. May I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Outstanding. Thank you so much. The next up, University System of Maryland. Mr. Hickey, as always, good morning. It's great to see you. Please proceed.
Governor, good morning. Mr. Treasurer, Madam Comptroller, Tom Hickey, representing University System of Maryland. There are 6 items on the agenda for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Mr. Hickey. Is there any discussion on the USM agenda? Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Move to approve the agenda.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
Outstanding.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Mr. Hickey. Thank you. We'll proceed on to the MDOT agenda. Mr. Domsky, good morning.
Good morning. Great to see you. Good morning, Governor, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer. For the record, I'm Valerie Radomski, Chief Procurement Officer for the Maryland Department of Transportation. Today, the department is seeking approval of 10 agenda items. Included are 2 contract actions being awarded to certified minority and small business enterprises totaling approximately $1.3 million. Additionally, 3 contract actions appearing on DGS's agenda total more than $1.2 million are being awarded to duly certified Maryland-based vendors. Representatives are available to answer any questions you may have pertaining to our agenda.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mr. Radomski. Is there any discussion to MDOT's agenda? Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Outstanding. Thank you so much. Thanks. And we will conclude with the DGS agenda. Secretary Chaudhry, good morning.
Morning. Mr. Governor, Madam Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer, for the record, I am Atif Chaudhry, Secretary of the Maryland Department of General Services. Today, the department is presenting 46 items on our agenda. We will be withdrawing 2 items today. Item 16AE mod and item 29SOPT. Our agenda features nearly $18 million in capital grants and loans. I just want to highlight a few of those. I want to highlight item 3CGL, which is $1 million for the reconstruction and site improvements for Baltimore's Washington Monument and the surrounding squares in Mount Vernon Place. This project will restore the largest green space in this area of Baltimore City. Not only will the project restore the historic park, but it will also create a more beautiful and pedestrian-friendly Mount Vernon Place through improvements to accessibility, safety, maintenance, as well as sustainability. I want to also highlight item 6CGL, which is for the renovation of the Langley Park Boys and Girls Club in Prince George's County. This is a wonderful program that's committed to creating a positive environment for youth as well as changing their lives. And finally, I want to conclude by highlighting item 9CGL. Which is $2 million for the Girl Scouts 34-acre Camp Woodlands property located in Anne Arundel County in Broad Creek. This investment will provide for the construction of new year-round cabins and lodges, as well as upgrades to the stormwater management system, ADA-compliant improvements to the buildings and grounds, and upgraded plumbing electrical systems as well. Our agenda also includes 9 contracts with new awards or modifications to contracts with MBE prime contractors totaling over $27 million. We have agency representatives here to answer any questions you may have.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And there's actually a few items that I would just like to like to highlight as well. First, I just want to give a very quick shout out to item 4CGL, which is an $11 million capital grant for renovations at the Only Theater. I've had a chance to attend a few events over at the Only Theater, most recently back in April, with our Lieutenant Governor and the Second Gentleman and the First Lady. We had to had a chance to attend a play, Nice Indian Boy.
You can call me.
Maybe more shows coming up, I promise. But that was a good play, I gotta say. That was good.
Oh, rub it in.
But it is a wonderful community jewel, a wonderful facility. I can't wait to get there again with the treasure at some point. And next, also, I'd like to highlight item 46RP, which is a request by Washington College to amend. Good to see you, Mr. Ryan. Good to see you. Good to see you. To amend and clarify a deed that was signed by members of the Board of Public Works in 2012, when it transferred ownership of the Chestertown Armory to the town of Chestertown, who then sold it to Washington College. This item, which really what it does, it just makes a simple clarification, has taken years to make a simple clarification, and it stood in the way of the college being able to advance their very, very exciting plans to be able to expand, build a hotel and a conference center right in the heart of Chestertown, which is going to have a significant impact, not just on the community, but on a significant impact on economic activity as well. So, Mr. President, and also Mayor Foster, thank you both for joining us today. Thank you both for your leadership. Thank you both also just for your determination, because this has not been simple. It should have been more simple.
Yes.
And we are glad, honored, and thankful to be the BPW that can finally take this action today and to allow this game-changing project to be able to move forward. I am very supportive of this project. I'm excited about the momentum and all the positive energy and all the positive impact that we're seeing in Chestertown, Eastern Shore, and all throughout the state. And so we just want to take a moment just to say to you both and to your teams, thank you for continuing to push. And we are very, very excited that today is finally here. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Lastly, we have a speaker request, and that's on item 43M for Mr. Patrick Moran from AFSCME. Welcome back. We didn't mean to scuttle you off quickly earlier, but it's good to have you back, and thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Governor. Members of PW, again, my name is Patrick Moran, AFSCME Maryland Council 3. Our union represents tens of thousands of state employees across the state of Maryland, and we take our public service work very seriously. Fortunately, we have seen over the multiple administrations the outsourcing of state services. This DGS landscaping and grounds contract is yet another example of this, and we oppose this. AFSCME represents workers in Bargaining Unit A, the labor and trades unit. This includes groundskeepers, people who would do outlined work in this contract. We don't believe that corporations making money off the state, we'd rather see paying our public servants fair wages and benefits directly as an alternative. We've got to put together a list from the last year, millions of dollars in contracts like this that pay market rate to private employers who do the work of state employees. Should not be the policy of the state to enrich private corporations when they could and should be employing public servants to do this work and have middle-class jobs here in Maryland. We want to partner with the BPW to rein in this outsourcing of state services so that we together can be good stewards of the taxpayers' money here in Maryland. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Patrick, as always. And we appreciate your thoughts, not just on this particular contract at all, but also just your continued leadership. And you have my administration's commitment that we'll be working in partnership to make sure that we're both rebuilding state government and making sure that we're building properly going forward. So thank you. Thank you so much. With that, is there any further discussion on the DGS agenda?
If I can, Governor, before we get to actual vote, I need to separate out item 42CGL. The recipient of this grant has a relationship with an organization, a fraternal organization I'm affiliated with. So right. In the interest of full disclosure and transparency, I'd like to separate that one out.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. Thank you. With that, is there a motion to approve the agenda with the inclusion of the exclusion?
Yes, with the inclusion of the exclusion. excluding item 42 CGL, and also I want to say to Patrick, I'm fully committed with you and with the governor to making sure that we're looking for ways to insource moving forward, which I think we've said in previous meetings as well, and we'll continue to do that. So excluding 42, move the rest of the agenda.
Great. Is there a second?
Second.
Outstanding.
And vote on 42.
And for the vote on 42, considering the exclusion, is there a vote to move forward?
Move item 42.
Wonderful. Thank you.
And you vote.
And I vote yes. I vote yes. This concludes today's board meeting. The next meeting will be on July 19th. Thank you all. We are officially adjourned.
Manny, you got a second?
Yes.